Great moments are born from great opportunity.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Average Joe's wins in a shocking upset.
I feel shocked.
You suck compared to me.
So you guys are two prep school white guys podcast.
We are underdogs.
They stay ready, so you don't have to get ready.
Man, I haven't even told anybody this. This is kind of crazy.
Robinson for three.
Hello and welcome to the Long Shot Podcast. I am your host, Davis Reed, and today I want to do a little playoff recap. It's been a weird week as a Duncan Robinson fan and friend, and I want to talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about the Heat-Philly series in general, and then I want to touch quickly on the other three series in the playoffs because I think all of them are very interesting. I've got a few takeaways from each. So let's start with Miami-Philly, and I want to start at the beginning just to provide a little context, because I think it matters in the scope of how this series has played out. Games one and two, the Heat roll. No Joel Embiid. It just kind of looks like Philly. It looked like Philly wasn't fit to win a playoff game without him, especially against Miami. I mean, they just looked like the far superior team in those first two games. But then they go to Philly. Joel's back. He's got the Batman mask on, torn ligament in his hand. Doesn't matter. He wasn't amazing in game three, but his presence just changed everything. Philadelphia hit a lot of shots. Miami didn't hit a lot of shots. But I think really the story was Joel's presence changed everything. On the defensive end, his presence just makes it more difficult. On the offensive end, it opened up space for everybody else. And they're at home. You know, they say a series doesn't start till a team wins on the road. In that case, this series hasn't started yet because Philly then goes on to win game four. And it's a similar story. I mean, James Harden decides to have a vintage James Harden performance, but it's another bad shooting night for the Heat, a good shooting night for Philly. Joel Embiid's presence, again, is evident, what he does on both ends of the floor. And it's amazing how the narrative just starts to switch immediately, right? Because the Heat were up 2-0. They defended their home court. No Joel Embiid. And it was like, oh, this series is over. Even if Joel plays, it's, you know, it's probably insurmountable. Then Philly finds a way to win two at home. And again, this saying goes, a series doesn't start till a team wins on the road. But the narrative was, oh, wait a minute, is Philly just the better team? Like, maybe Miami's not as good as we thought. The other narrative, well, I should also say, JJ, dear friend of the pod, jumped ship. He jumped from the Heat bandwagon to the Philly bandwagon. We're not going to forgive him for that. But that was sort of the tone. That was the momentum was like, wait a minute, are we sleeping on Philly? They look like they could be the better team here. The matchups favored them and, you know, blah, blah, blah. The other narrative that started to pick up was, why is Duncan not playing? Because in games three and four, the Heat really struggled from three. And some really prominent, really smart basketball heads started to talk about, wait, why is one of the best shooters in the world not playing in a game where a few makes could have ended that series, right? Like, even though Miami was shooting really poorly, I think 14 for 65 across those two games, Philly was shooting well, but still, those games were in the balance there. You know, a couple made shots for Miami could have put that series away, and Duncan was on the bench the whole time. So, Bill Simmons, Zach Lowe, Ramona Shelburne, even Skip Bayless, Shea Serrano, guys are going to Twitter on their podcast talking about, wait, why is Duncan not playing? And I got to say, as a friend of his, it was kind of cool to see that national coverage or the momentum start to pick up. And I think it's actually an interesting study in maybe it was just obvious to everybody. That's why it became a news story all of a sudden. Because, you know, First Take's talking about it. ESPN in general is talking about it. Again, it's on the Bill Simmons pod. People are talking about it. National prominent media heads are talking about it. So maybe it just became obvious to everybody all at once. I also think it's a sort of a lesson in the news cycle. It's like once something gets picked up by somebody, everybody else sort of jumps on board. But regardless, it was fun to see that be a story. And look, I have some thoughts of my own on this subject, but I'm going to refrain on them for now for a variety of reasons. Look, Spo's one of the best coaches in the world. The Heat are one win away from the Eastern Conference Finals. And the Heat believed in Duncan when no one else did. We're in this position. We do this podcast because of them, because of the opportunity that they provided him. And Duncan's been the ultimate professional through all this. He's got the quote. He said, look, when Spo tells me to go in, I go in. When he tells me to sit on the bench, I sit on the bench. That's what he's going to do. He's done that his whole career. He's about winning. And so I'm going to do the same. Now, look, do I think that they could use him? Does it sometimes feel like people forgot that he started and played 30 minutes a game on a team that went to the finals 2 years ago? Do I think that maybe one of the best shooters in the world could be effective against a team that plays drop coverage and allows open threes? Yes to all of those questions. Also, do you know how many players this year made more threes than Duncan on a higher percentage? Five. That's it. That's the whole list. Just five guys. Steph, Fred VanVleet, Trae Young, Evan Fournier, Malik Beasley. That's it. So, you know, I am biased. I'm not going to hide my bias. I think that he could be out there and he could help the Heat win games. But the Heat are rolling. You know, game five, they get off to a hot start. They don't really look back. They're rolling. They're one win away from the Eastern Conference Finals. And Duncan got to play a little bit in game five. And so all is well in Heat world. I will say it was very cool to see the narrative on social media sort of shift, because it's been rough at times on Duncan. And I'm tuned into that. I'm, you know, he stays away, but I am dialed in. I'm on social media too much, so I see it all. And guys, it's mean. It weighs on me a little bit. But the tone shifted before game five. Some of you guys that were brutal early on were all of a sudden your tone switched to, God, we need Duncan. Duncan could save us. And so it was cool to take a step back and understand this is the reputation he's built himself. You know, he gets a good look. He gets a standing ovation when he checks into game five. That was pretty cool. Felt the love in Miami. And then he gets that transition three. Great look. You know, didn't fall, but it was a good look. Looked good right online. And you could just feel the whole arena sort of stand up when he took it. Because very few guys have that leverage in the NBA, have that pull where you get an open look and everyone expects it to go in. And Duncan has earned that reputation. So he starts to shoot it. You can sort of hear the, oh, in the arena. That's awesome. Love those moments. They were ready to erupt for him. And it's special that he has that power. I hope he continues to find those little pockets, right? Because Spo talks about this all the time. He's so ignitable. And Spo knows that. And I love that he got his little stretch there in the first half in game five. They're going to need him to have some of those moments. A guy who has proven the value of that is Davis Bertans in Dallas. He's had a few of those stretches where he comes in. I think it was game four. He comes in and nails, what is it, four threes in 4 minutes or something like that. But only a few guys have that power to get hot that quickly. Duncan is towards the top of that list. So they're going to need a couple of those stretches to win a championship, which I really think they can do. Whether you're going to be a groom, in a wedding party, or a lucky guest, everyone wants to look their best for a wedding. I know I did. And I spent a lot of time looking around. You know, I was looking at different rentals. I was looking at local places in Kansas City. It was hard to find the right suit. Stuff was expensive. Stuff didn't fit me the right way. Maybe didn't have the color I was looking for. I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted that sleek midnight navy, you know, the really dark blue that almost looks black, but then you get it next to black and you're like, oh, that's blue. How sexy is that? And with Indochino, I had exactly what I needed, because with Indochino, you get custom fitted stuff to help you look great, feel confident, and enjoy the big day without fussing over your clothes. I got to choose every detail on the suit, the pants, the jacket, the shirt, stuff that I didn't even know you got to decide on a suit. I'm talking like pockets, shoulders, lapel, what color I wanted the buttons, where I wanted the buttons, all sorts of stuff. I went with the pants that don't have the belt buckles. It was a beltless pant, which just, I don't know, it just helped me feel even a little bit sexier on my big wedding day. And that's what Indochino can do. Every suit is made to your exact measurements and you can customize every detail. Create a suit that fits you and your style perfectly with options for fabrics, lapel shape, custom monograms, statement linings, and more. And the best part, Indochino suits start from just $429 and shirts from just $79. Let me tell you, I did a lot of suit shopping for my wedding and that's a price that is hard to beat. Indochino also offers completely custom fitted shirts, casual wear, and more. So it's not just for weddings. But I know we're coming up on wedding season. So if you want to look your best for a wedding, if you've got a big day coming up, getting the perfect look is no big deal with Indochino. Get $50 off your purchase of $399 or more by using promo code LS at Indochino.com. That's $50 off a purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com. Promo code LS. Speaking of Bretons, Phoenix-Dallas, what an awesome series. The Suns are very confusing to me because at times they look like they're a massive tier above everybody else when DeAndre Ayton's just physically imposing himself down low. Mikal Bridges is shutting down the other team's best player. And then the fourth quarter is a little like Final Destination with them. You know, like you see your destiny, you know how your fate is sealed with Chris Paul and Devin Booker in the fourth quarter. You try to run from it, but you can't get away. Phoenix has a little bit of that. But then at times they look so human, and maybe that's credit to New Orleans because they were really tough in the first round. Maybe it's credit to Dallas because Luka's been amazing. The role players have stepped up. But I question if sometimes it's just that Phoenix has these lulls. It's hard to understand. But my biggest takeaway from this series is I was one of the better players on my team when I was a kid. But I would have like three possessions in a row where I would shoot, and then I would just feel guilty and feel like someone else needed to touch the ball. Luka has 0% of that in him, and I envy it so much, and I respect it so much. That guy has the ball in his hands every possession. He will shoot or pass at the end of the shot clock for somebody else to get a shot every possession, it feels like, and he's just unfazed. I mean, to have the mental fortitude to just be like, yeah, this game is going to be in my hands because I'm going to touch the ball every single time. And Luka obviously deserves to do that. He's one of the best players in the world, one of the most talented basketball players we've seen in a long time. But I just marvel at how often he gets the ball in his hands. And I really don't know if I'm built like that. And I know that says more about me maybe than Luka, but it's amazing. It really is amazing. Another guy who has the ball in his hands at all times is Giannis. And another guy who probably should have the ball in his hands at all times because he is, I think, it doesn't really feel like it's debatable anymore that he's probably the best player in the world. It seems like the narrative is sort of, people are starting to get behind that idea. I think it's been said for probably the last year or two, but seems indisputable at this point. That series is so strange because the Bucks, with no Chris Middleton, Giannis and Drew are taking half of the team's shots. They're not doing it incredibly efficiently, but the Bucks can still find ways to win just based off their championship swagger. You know, like winning a finals will just do something to you. They move differently. They look professional. They got a little calmness to them in these games. And Giannis, when I went home for Christmas break last year, I watched a freshman high school basketball game. And that's a really interesting age to watch because these kids that make the freshman team, if you're a really good freshman, you know, like stud, you're playing JV, you're playing even maybe varsity. But so the kids that are on the freshman team are this combination of either really skilled, but they just haven't fully developed yet or grown into their bodies. And so they're not really ready for that higher level. So they're playing freshman basketball. Or the flip side, where it's the kids who went through puberty at like 10 years old, they had the mustache before everybody else, but they haven't figured out their skill set yet. It's those kids that are playing in the freshman game. And so it's immediately apparent which is which, right? Like, oh, that kid looks like he's 12, but man, he can really shoot it. Or, oh, that kid looks like he's 18, but he's having a hard time dribbling in a straight line. It's just a fascinating level of basketball to watch. Giannis gives me some flashes of the kid who went through puberty before everybody else because there are times where he's just storming down the court and it's just the defense is helpless. It's like, what do you do? It's like, this is the kid who got muscles before everybody else. We just need to get out of the way. We have no hope. Now, obviously, Giannis is incredibly skilled too. I don't mean to say that he's just brute force and that's it. But if you get a chance, go watch a freshman high school basketball game. Find the kid who clearly went through puberty before everyone else and tell me he doesn't remind you a little bit of Giannis. That's all I'm saying. I'm recording this before game 5 of this series, by the way, so I have no idea who just took the lead. But it's a fascinating series to me because while all that is true about the Bucks, they look professional, that Giannis is the best player in the world, the Celtics are probably the better team right now, especially without Chris Middleton. They have more talent. Al Horford has found the fountain of youth. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have sort of stuck their middle finger up to the basketball world and said, hey, for everybody who thought we couldn't play together, look at us now, because we might be the most terrifying wing duo in the NBA. So it's just a fascinating series. I hope it goes seven, mainly because it's been so much fun to watch. But also, I think the Heat are going to beat the Sixers. And so the longer that that series goes, the more games and minutes those guys have to log, and that's better for the Heat. The last series I want to touch on real quick is Memphis-Golden State. Again, recording before Game 5, so this one might be over by the time you hear this. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it probably is, because it just completely changes without Ja. It's unfortunate that he's done. The Grizzlies are they've been so weird this year because at times they look like they're better without him, which makes no sense. There's really no reason that they should be. But in the playoffs, I just think you need a closer like Ja has proven to be. He's sort of submitted himself in the category of elite closers down the stretch. He's just had some moments that it seems like he's unstoppable. When I played defense, I was never athletic enough to stay in front of anyone. So I was pretty much always guessing which way a guy would go. And I just had to jump one way and hope that I guessed right. Sort of like defending a PK. I think even if you took the most elite defender, the most laterally gifted guy in the league, they still at times just need to guess against Ja because he's so quick. He can just blow past you so effortlessly that you're just guessing most of the time and hoping that you get some help defense or some rim protection to make it difficult on him. The one thing that stuck out to me about this series is how freaking hard these guys are playing. And I know it's the playoffs. Everybody's playing hard. Everybody wants to win. But after the Dylan Brooks, Gary Payton moment, it just felt like things ratcheted up 10 more notches. Not that the Warriors needed bulletin board material or extra motivation. Those guys are champions. They have their goals set on a finals run, so they know what they're doing. But Memphis plays so hard, and then when that happened, you could just tell a switch flipped. Like it pissed them off. You could tell it pissed Golden State off. In fact, shortly after is when Wiggins dunked on Brandon Clark. Well, he dunked on like the entire city of Memphis, but mainly Brandon Clark. And Steph was on the bench. He had a towel on his head. And you watch him. He goes all the way out to half court, just talking his shit, just yelling. And it maybe didn't jump out to anybody else, but to me it was like, oh, these guys really want to win this game now. Like these guys really want to put Memphis away. And I think you could just tell, like, Steve Kerr's throwing shade in post-game interviews. Taylor Jenkins throwing some shade in some post-game interviews. That's a rivalry. There's some spite. There's some hate there. Hate's maybe too strong of a word. But those guys are getting after it, and I love it. It's what makes playoff basketball so special. It's amazing. That's it. That's all I got. But I'll leave you with this. I'm Team Heat over here. I legitimately think these guys can do it. I think they can win an NBA championship. And in order to do so, I think they're going to need our guy. And he's going to be ready. Duncan has been the ultimate professional, incredibly supportive. Watch a Heat game. He's on his feet the whole time. He's talking to his teammates. He's talking shit to George. He's talking to the refs. Time out. He's the first one out giving high fives. He's locked in. He's ready. This is nothing new to him. I am fired up to see how this all plays out.